Inferno on Ice is produced in conjunction with Blaze Radio, the on-campus radio station at Arizona State University. Welcome back to Inferno on Ice. I'm your host, Drew Smith. The Devils took down St. Cloud State this past weekend, 6-3 on Friday and 5-3 on Saturday. On Friday, Potter, Eckerle, Smolin, Sillinger, and Kerwin, who had two goals, all scored for the Devils. On Saturday, Sillinger, Beck, Jackson, Kerwin, and Schlein all had goals for ASU to complete the sweep, moving the Sun Devils into sole first place in the NCHC. ASU is now 13-8-1 on the season. Joining me today on the show is Ben Holden, a longtime college hockey broadcaster who called games in the NCHC when I was doing my undergrad at UMD. For the NCHC fans who have followed you since the early day of the conference, what are you up to now, Ben?
Well, it's good to be on with you, buddy. It's been a while since I've seen you, so thanks for having me on. And yeah, doing a lot of different stuff. This is my fifth year doing Big Ten games. I do about 10 a year for the Big Ten, and which is great for me after all the years I traveled and was at CBS for 13 and did the NCHC for 8 and did the bubble, which is still one of the career highlights for me, doing that bubble for 3 weeks. And, you know, before that, I did the CCHA. I live in suburban Detroit. I did that league for 9 years. So, you know, it's nice for me now to be able to get in my truck like this weekend. I'm going to go up to Michigan State. It's about a 50-minute drive. Got Minnesota and the Spartans was up there last week. Michigan's 20 minutes from me, so that's really all I'm doing in hockey anymore. And, you know, whatever else comes up, I will be doing the CCHA championship this year again. Don Lucia is bringing Pat Micheletti and myself back. So it's always an honor when someone asks you to do their championship game and probably some of the Big Ten playoffs. And I do a lot of rugby now. I've really kind of carved out a niche doing that. So, but hockey wise, I mean, I'm happy and thankful to be doing another season of games, a package of games with Big Ten. And, you know, I'll keep doing games until they lock the door and kick me out, man. So it's one of my passions, as you know, and I love being a small part of college hockey.
Let's talk about that bubble. What do you remember from that? And how did you feel when it finally concluded? 38 games, I think, in the pod there in Omaha.
Yeah, I did 22 games, and I would have done it for 3 months. I mean, that's how I felt about it. It was hockey 24/7. We were embedded in the hotel with North Dakota. We were literally about a 3-minute walk across the parking lot. If you've ever been to Omaha's rink, it's all right there. And, you know, that's literally all it was. It was hockey 24/7. And at that stage of my career, when I made the decision to basically walk away from CBS, that was a big reason behind it, because I just wanted to do hockey. And, you know, then I had a job in the KHL, which was the best job I've ever had in 30 years of television. And that went away because of Putin deciding to invade Ukraine, and everyone dropped RT America here in the States. But that's another story. But the bubble, I'm telling you, man, I would have done it for 3 months. I would have done it for as long as they would have done it. It was incredible. Spent a lot of time with Starman and Jake Brandt and Brad Schlossman. We hung out pretty much every night and talked hockey and watched movies, and it was fantastic, man. I loved it. It's one of the career highlights for me. It really is, because how many people can say they've done that? You know, and I remember seeing the NHL bubble earlier that year. Ours started right after Thanksgiving that year, in 2020, and it was awesome, man. It was just literally hockey 24/7, and you know, calls on Zoom with everybody, the players, the coaches every day, and it was terrific, man. It's something I'll always remember and always cherish.
Yeah, so after the bubble, you got to call KHL. You did that from the United States. What was it like calling games remotely?
It was interesting. It was really my first taste in doing it that way. Oddly enough, I do Major League Rugby here in the U.S. and a lot of things for World Rugby, some of which are on-site. I'm going to Vancouver for the 7 Series. I'm going to L.A. for that one, for World Rugby. Those are on-site. But Major League Rugby, that's how I've done that now. This will be my 5th year, and I think it's the 4th year that we've done it out of a studio in Indy. So I say that because when I did the KHL, it was all English speaking. We were very popular in Europe with the English speaking broadcast. We had a pretty big following in Canada, believe it or not, just because people are, hockey crazy up there. I had an unbelievable setup. I mean, I had two probably 60-inch screens in front of me. We had IT people, we had engineers. It was literally the feeds came in from Moscow, and we literally, Drew, we picked the games we wanted to do. So it was, for me, it was heaven. Again, that's kind of where I was at that stage in my career, and I just wanted to work in hockey. I was in the American League and got divorced and made a promise to my son that I wouldn't leave unless an NHL opportunity came, and unfortunately for me, that never came for whatever reasons, but it's just the way my career has gone. And doing that job in DC is where I lived. I lived a 60-second walk from the front of the White House. I walked down 15th Street. New York and Pennsylvania intersected right there, a half a block down from my apartment. I walked 4 minutes to work. It was about a 2-block walk to the studio. After all the years, I got on planes every week and had to get to work on a plane every week. I did that for 12 straight years, and it's taxing. I mean, it's not like a pro team where you're on a charter, man. You're flying commercial, and it's very demanding. A lot of time away from home, and my son made a lot of sacrifices, and as did I. But that job was incredible, man. I loved it. It was so good. We had an unbelievable setup. The studio stuff we did was phenomenal. Just a really good group of pros. And, again, I was doing what I wanted to do and was making more money than I'd ever made and didn't have to fly. And I came home and, BTN gave me another package of games that year. And I was able to fly back and see my girlfriend because most of those games were on, were either at Michigan or Michigan State. And she didn't move. She was going to about a month before everything happened overseas. And we got shut down within 6 days, man. So that was a tough one to lose. It was like a death in many ways, because leaving CBS took me a while to get over that. That was difficult. I was there a long time, but yeah, it was great. I'd still be there, man, if it was still going. I would have never left. I would have stayed there and loved living in DC. I served my country and love DC, and I love being able to get on my bike. And I mean, I could ride down to the Washington Monument. It was right down at the bottom of 15th Street in like 2 minutes on my bike. I rode right by the Treasury, right by the entrance to the White House, to the two wings of the White House right there, and Pennsylvania Avenue. And it was great, man. It was an unbelievable opportunity.
How did you get into broadcasting, and how did you become first involved in college hockey?
I had my grandpa Foy, my mom's dad, was a huge Michigan State guy. And went to Jennison to watch Magic play when I was a kid, and went to Munn Arena to watch those really good Michigan State teams in the early and mid 80s when I was a kid growing up playing hockey, and grew up in Lansing. And so my grandpa was really my influence. And later in my life, I went to my last 2 years of high school, I went to Traverse City, which is, if for those not from Michigan, that's right up here. That's how we do it in Michigan, right? We show where we're from by our hand. So I played hockey there, and great experience. And that was the, extent of my career. I didn't play in college. I had a public speaking teacher. His name was Larry Nykerk, and he was a tennis coach for a long time, couple decades at Traverse City. I took the public speaking class because the seed with my grandfather, not only did he take me to a ton of games, and I walked over to their house through the woods where I grew up to watch games with him. He was the PA announcer for Holt High School, the town I grew up in. It's south of Lansing. So I would sit with him, and I just admired him so much that I was like, I want to do what grandpa does. Even though my grandpa's full-time job, he was a chemist. He owned his own lab, and he had a business, but he had kids that played sports, and a handful of them played basketball. So he did the PA. So I really got it from him. And then mentioned Mr. Nykerk because that was another big moment in something in my journey to becoming a broadcaster. He said, you should think about radio or TV. You have an FM voice. You're a very good speaker. You're comfortable. You can talk to an audience, yada, yada, yada. Then I went in the Navy for 2 years, and the chaplain of our ship, the USS Kiska, we were based out of the Bay Area in California, and he literally gave me the keys to the radio and TV station because he knew my desire to want to do this for a living. We did like movie intros. I had a buddy from Philly that was a camera guy, so it was perfect for me. I had a guy to shoot the intros to the movies, did news, did sports, did all kinds of stuff. And then I went to a trade school when I got out of the Navy. And a big part of why I went in the Navy, one of the big reasons was because I got the GI Bill to pay for my school. And you know, I get asked a lot, why didn't you go to college? Why'd you go that way? And I went to the broadcast trade school here in Detroit because, and it's not a knock on college, it was what I wanted. I wanted to go in, get certified, get a crash course on television, learn what I was doing, and start going to get a job. That's why I went that route. I didn't go to college. I worked for my dad for 3 years as a carpenter building homes, and then I went in the Navy for 2 years. So that was my college, you know, so to speak. And yeah, that's kind of the path I took. And you know, I was 24 years old and started calling high school games, and opportunities kept coming. So still going, just trying to survive, man.
You're up in Michigan now. What are some storylines that you're following this week just going on around the NCAA?
Oh man, I mean, well, I'm lucky, man. I get to call the Saturday game at Mon on Big Ten Network at 6 Eastern time. Minnesota, they're fourth in the country. Michigan State, number two in the country. I wish we could do both games, but I'm glad I got one, and I'm honestly glad it's the second game because I think in college hockey, as you know, Drew, you've been around it for a while too. You know, that second game, the team that won the night before has got their foot on your chest, and they're trying to sweep the series, and the other one's just trying to get points. So, you know, you look at this series with Michigan State and Minnesota. I mean, two against four, they're going to both be, in all likelihood, both be one seeds in the NCAA tournament. They're battling it out for the Big Ten title. They're battling it out in the pairwise. I mean, these games are going to mean so much to both these clubs. So that would be my number one storyline. Just so happens to be, like I said, I'm lucky enough to be assigned to call that game. So, you know, there's a lot of really good storylines in the Big Ten. I mean, I really follow the Big Ten more than I do. You know, I pay attention to the rest of the country, but obviously doing games in the conference. I think the Wisconsin game with Michigan, and that series, that's a big series because Michigan's a team, you know, I think we saw them last week, and I went to the game Friday at Yost to scout and do my homework like I can when I can, you know, again, being able to drive to a game and, you know, seeing it in person makes a difference for me. I think Michigan's a team that, you know, Friday they played Michigan State really well. They beat them in overtime, but they're struggling in some areas, and those areas, one of those areas is getting secondary scoring and even getting consistent scoring because, I mean, they lost their top five scorers from last year, and I'm not making excuses for Michigan, but that's an awful lot to replace. And a couple of those guys didn't leave until August, so you're kind of caught. Like, it's hard. I mean, yeah, you have the portal, but to replace the kind of players that they lost, a Rucker McGroarty, a Seamus Casey, a Dylan Duke, I mean, those are guys that put up a ton of points. And so I think that's where Michigan struggles. But, you know, Michigan State, Minnesota, back to that game. I mean, that is going to be an absolute heavyweight series. State went into Mariucci back in December, and you know, they salvaged a shootout win, goes down as a tie, of course. Then the next night, they're down 3-1. They end up winning that game. I think it was 5-3. They get the win in that one. They're a team that's so hard to play against. And, you know, to see their turnaround in the last, now into year three with Adam Nightingale is absolutely incredible because for 10 years, they were clearly one of the worst programs in college hockey. They really were. They had no sustainability. They weren't winning. They had horrible season after horrible season. And Nightingale's come in and just done an unbelievable job of getting his guys to buy in. They've got some big time players. They got a couple first round picks in Isaac Howard and Charlie Strammel that have come in, and they're producing, man. I mean, Isaac Howard's leading the country in goals and points. So, and Strammel's played big really all season. So, that's really the series I'm focused in on this weekend, man.
Now here comes Lattaru back the other way. Lattaru gives it up right and they score! Minnesota Duluth wins it! They get the winner in overtime! the second overtime.
Besides the pod in the NCHC, where does the 2019 Frozen Faceoff rank on your list of games that you've called?
Oh, man, that's... You were at Duluth then, right?
I was. I was there at the game that night, and it was a late one, but holy moly, what a game there.
That was like a regional final, Drew. It really was. I mean, and I've talked to countless players on both sides over the years. I mean, and they've all said it was like a tournament game. I mean, it was unbelievable how good both those teams were. And, you know, for Duluth, obviously we know what they did in that stretch, and St. Cloud close, but just not over the hump. And I mean, it didn't feel like it was ever going to end, man. And Nick Sweeney, Minnesota Wild pick, you know, he made the winning play. And, you know, I'd like to pull up the roster from that game. I don't know if I can do it right here in this position, but I mean, there was so much talent on the ice in that game. And, you know, just an absolute battle, absolute war. And Scott Sandelin's teams always had that sandpaper to them. They had skill, but they had that sandpaper. They had that toughness about them. And, you know, St. Cloud did too at that time with Brett Larson. So both great coaches, great men who were great to me in all the years that, you know, I was in that league. And even now, you know, I'll randomly text them every now and then, you know, after, you know, Lars won another gold with the World Junior team, sent him a text. David Carl, all I do, by the way, with David Carl, the only time I text him is after they win, and I look through my text chain, and it was literally like, congrats on the World Junior, congrats on another national title, congrats on another World Junior. And it's just awesome to see those guys in the great sport of college hockey doing what they're doing.
Speaking of that, who do you think will be some next perennial powerhouses just across the country?
Well, I mean, I think where you're at, you know, out there in the desert, I think Greg Powers has got a heck of a program. I mean, last week they go into St. Cloud and they sweep that series, you know, and
yeah,
tight games. I mean, Greg's done an unreal job. And, you know, you asked me before we started, had I ever done an Arizona State game? And no, I never have. And, you know, I wish I could go out there and do a couple right now. It's 5 degrees here in Michigan. But, you know, I think they're one of them. I think another program to keep an eye on is Garrett Reboin. St. Cloud guy, was with Bob Motzko at St. Cloud, went to Minnesota with Bob, and Garrett's a great young coach, World Junior guy too, you know, like Brett Larson and Steve Killer Miller, and you know, the group of guys they've had together. He's a great coach. I think those would be the two that I would say are two to watch out for. I'm trying to think out east. No one else really comes to mind for me, but Greg's been around. I mean, Greg's got an established program. I mean, what a recruiting tool, man. You want to come play hockey in Tempe? I mean, come on. Like, if I'm a college hockey player, I'm taking a long, hard look at Arizona State, man. There's no doubt. And even Augustana, the weather's not nearly as good as you know, but they've got a brand new rink. They've got a young coach that can recruit. He's energetic. He can really relate to his players. You know, look at the job David Carl's done. David's still 35 or 36, and he's been coaching Denver for, what, 7 years? Whatever it's been. I mean, players want that. They want those younger guys they can connect and relate with, and I think those would be the two for me. Arizona State and Augustana, I think those are programs that are going to be really good for the long haul.
And speaking of Carl, do you think he's going to go pro, Ben?
I think if he does, it's going to be very, very calculated how he does this. David's a family guy. He's got young kids. Him and his wife are happy there in Denver, wherever they live. Yeah, it's the $1 million question. You know, like, look at the amount of coaches and the turnover, though, in the National Hockey League. I mean, coaches are getting fired. Look at right here in Detroit. I mean, Derek Lalonde gets fired a month ago in season. Coaches in the NHL, to me, among the four major sports in our country, they have the shortest life expectancy or shortest lifespan, not even expectancy. Well, probably both. They have the shortest life expectancy and the shortest lifespan in their jobs. So does David Carl want to pack up, go to wherever he goes and move his family? And if he goes there and has, you know, a couple of bad years, he's not going to survive. I mean, a very good friend of mine, David Quinn, who coached the Rangers and was let go from the Sharks. Now he's an assistant with Mike Sullivan in Pittsburgh. I mean, they told Quinny they were going to keep him. And then a month later, they get rid of him. You know, and he's in the midst of a rebuild, as anyone that knows the NHL knows how bad the Sharks had been for a couple years. So there's just no guarantee you're gonna last through that contract. I don't think he's in no rush. I'll put it that way. I mean, I haven't talked to David. Just text him when he wins, right? I used to see him a lot doing that conference. But if I'm him, I'm not leaving unless it's the absolute right situation. And that team's got to be a good team, like put together well. You know, he's not going to a rebuild. He can stay at Denver and build his team the way he wants it. I mean, look, think about this too. Like, you know, living where I live and one of the guys that I covered for a lot of years when I was a local news reporter is Tom Izzo. I mean, look at Tom Izzo at Michigan State. He's never left. Look at Mike Krzyzewski. You know, there's all kinds of guys that never coached at the quote unquote highest level, but it is the highest level for them. I remember Andy Murray always saying to me, the longtime NHL coach, he was at Western for a few years. And I remember sitting down doing a long interview with him. I think it was for Comcast back then. It was regional sports that I worked for here in Detroit. And I said, so you're not at the top level of coaching. How does it feel to be in college? And he kind of took that as a shot, so to speak, right? And the way I said that, someone might take it that way. But I was in college. I wasn't calling pro games. But am I at the top level? I'm at the top level of the opportunity I have. That's how Andy Murray responded to me. And I learned a lot from that. I learned a lot from him saying that about him and about myself at that time of my career. If I'm David Carl, man, I'm going to keep coaching at Denver. I'm going to keep winning games. I'm going to keep being in the Frozen Four and compete for national championships every year. There's no reason for him to go and get fired. And then he's starting over, right? In essence. So,
and it takes forever to build a team too. You know, those players, you know, yeah. They're 4 or 5 years out.
Yeah, it does. And like I said, I mean, unless it's a team, that's a team where you know, that's a good hockey team. I mean, but then you think about, well, they're going to fire the coach if the team's that good. I think there could be a situation where maybe they miss out on the playoffs the last week of the season. And it's a good young nucleus of players. You know, like if it's me, I mean, I'm looking at teams like right now in that realm. Obviously, my Red Wings are out of the equation because they got Todd McClellan. So they don't need a coach. I mean, he's, you know, they went through a little patch here the last couple. But all in all, they're playing much better hockey. He's winning at about a 750 win percentage in the games he's been here. But like a team like Ottawa, that's a team with a ton of young college players, ton of young prospects. You got Tkachuk, you got Stützle, you got Batherson. You got a team like that I could see him going to. A San Jose, there's no way. And they might have called him last year. Who knows? I'm not going to coach that team. Yeah, Macklin, Celebrini. But you're at least 2 or 3 years away from being a competitive hockey team. It's all of what he wants, but that's just me. That's how I kind of see, you know, what he may end up doing. But I don't think he's leaving, man. I think he's staying in Denver for the long haul. I really do.
What do you think makes a good color analyst?
I think what makes a good color analyst is number one, you know, they have to be a good listener. But as a play-by-play guy, we have to be a good listener because you have to be connected. And I've been really fortunate with a handful of analysts that I've worked with over the years in various sports. And I've worked with a ton of analysts in all the different sports that I've done, Drew. You know, I'll give you one example. Like, you know, Jay Feely's a guy that, you know, I worked with Jay for 4 years. You know, we became really, really close, good friends away from. So that helps. And it comes across on the air. So back to your question. Starman's another one. I worked with Dave for a long time. We're friends away from the ice. You know, we don't talk like we used to with text randomly or whatever. I see him, he sees me on the air, you know, he shoot a text off. Those two guys, you know, for me were guys I worked with. I worked with Dave for 10 years and I worked with Jay for 4, but you know, I did 16 games a year with Jay. So the volume of games was pretty high. But back to your question, you know, you gotta be a good listener. You gotta do your homework. You gotta understand what the play-by-play guy's going through in terms of the traffic, and there's reads and there's a lot of things going on in our heads that nobody knows, right? I mean, only TV people know that kind of stuff that Hey, the producer's talking to you, the director's talking to you, the associate director might be talking to you. So we got to kind of, steer the ship, so to speak, and, land planes, as we like to say. All right, we got to get this one down. If we got a sideline reporter, we have to mix them in. So I think all those things, and I think, clearly doing your homework. I mean, that's one thing that Feely did, and obviously Dave does, and Fred Pletch, who I work with now. I mean, Freddie and I have been friends for a long time, and just the homework that you put in, it just comes across on the air. Kevin O'Connell's another guy, and Kevin just got re-signed by the Vikings. I was with Kevin for 1 year, and you could see the smarts that he had, man. It was really cool. And I live in Detroit, but I'm a fan of Kevin, man, and so I'm happy for Kevin. But I think all those things, you just have to, and you gotta know when to, kind of shut up, I guess, for lack of better words. In the biz, it's called a layout. You gotta know when to let the crowd take over and let the director cut the show. And we do too as play-by-play guys. There's an old adage: simpler and shorter is oftentimes better. We don't need to ramble on for 10 seconds after a goal. Three, four, five max. Boom. Layout. Let the crowd go. Let the director cut pictures.
And speaking of the play-by-play, how much work goes into preparing for a hockey game?
It varies. I mean, this week I usually spend anywhere from, not an entire 10-hour day, but I'll spend some time every day during the week leading up to just one game. For me, I'm bouncing around doing different games, and I say it depends because, like this week, I just did Michigan State, right? So half of my work is sort of done, if that makes sense. Like, today we talked to Isaac Howard and Patrick Geary from Michigan State. Tomorrow we'll talk to some Minnesota guys and, pull what we can from them. And, we'll visit with both coaches before the game on Saturday, since we're doing game two. We'll go back, we'll listen to, Bob Motzko, we'll listen to Adam Nightingale this week, and, just maybe pull a note or a quote from their press conference. We don't need to take their time, doing the second game. We can go in with them like we do any game for 5, 10 minutes on Saturday. I don't know if a lot of people realize this, but head coaches, especially hockey coaches, hour and a half before a game, they're climbing the walls, man. They need something to do. So I don't think they really mind that. They enjoy it because it kind of gets their mind off, trying to kill time. And David Quinn was always great with that when I was with him for 2 years in the American Hockey League. He'd see me come in and, "Hey, Benny, you ready for the interview?" I was like, "Coach, I'm doing his Boston accent." I was like, "Yeah, coach, I'm ready for the interview." And we'd go out in the hallway and talk for 10 minutes. So, it just varies. Before you and I hopped on, I was watching back the Minnesota Notre Dame condensed games from the weekend, and to get a a little better feel for the Gophers. And they got a lot of new players this year, and so just it's something every day. Fred and I will go to Munn on Friday and watch the game, and scout the game, through our eyes, and then still more stuff to finish up and clean up and do on Saturday before the game, and then get to the rink, go talk to the coaches, do what we got to do with our television crew, and rock and roll. Then the easy part comes, Drew. It's calling the game's the easy part. Not that any of it's hard, but call, I guess the game itself is kind of like the cherry on top. Like, all right, we did all this. It's kind of like players. You practice all week, you go through, you rehearse, you get stuff to stick to your brain, and then you go out and you perform and you execute in television. That's how I've always approached it.
Okay, I have one more fun question for you. What's your favorite arena or venue to call a game from?
Wow, that's hard. It's hard for me to give you just one. Man, that's really difficult because I have like five that would be like one. If that's, I don't know if I can do that. Will you accept that?
Sure, let's do it.
I would say, in no particular order, Yost is amazing. I'll put it to you this way: Yost, and when it's full in Ann Arbor at Michigan, is unbelievable. And I would put North Dakota's building in the same breath, but they're the new school. Michigan's the old school. North Dakota's the new school. Michigan State's a special one to me because of my grandfather. Like I mentioned to you, every game I do a game there, I walk down, I know right where we sat, and I always tap on the seats and say, "Love you, Grandpa," and look up, little salute to my grandpa every game. So that's really special to me. And You know, I grew up sitting in those seats. I grew up playing in that rink. My first game when I left local news in 2004 as a professional play-by-play man, that was all I was doing, was at Michigan State. So that one's really special to me. The environments in, I mean, the environments back at State, like it used to be. Yost, the Ralph, phenomenal buildings. I like going to Duluth, man. I'd throw that in there. And I would throw in Western Michigan. Western Michigan is, it's like a scene out of Happy Gilmore, man. It's, they're crowd surfing bodies through the Lawson Lunatics. I mean, it's just, it's nuts, man. And, you know, Duluth was always fun for me to go there. People care about hockey there. You know, I like to go there when it's above zero. I've never been there when it's been over zero. So I always talk with Sandy about, I said, I've always wanted to do a trip. I want to fly to Duluth. I want to start my trip and go all the way around the North Shore of Lake Superior down to the Sioux and come back into Michigan. And every time I told him that, you come up here for a week. We're playing golf. I'll send you on your way. You let me know if you ever do it. So those would be some of my favorites.
Yeah, Duluth in January is not so great, but Duluth in March is fine.
Yeah, so I've heard. I mean, I remember being there one time, and I don't think the wind chill got over minus 30. I mean, you couldn't even go outside. It was just brutal. I don't know how people live there. I give them credit, but I don't know how they live there.
And you have a podcast of your own, Ben. How can people find you?
Well, thanks for giving me that opportunity. So I started a podcast with former golfer, former USA development player, Mike Carmen. Carmi and I were in the American League together and that with that team in Lake Erie for a couple years. So yeah, it's called When the Game Ends, and it's the podcast. The premise of it is about athletes when they retire and they transition out of the game, because it came up this way, because Carmi and I were texting one night last summer. He's coaching a team. He lives in suburban Minneapolis where he's from. Hey, let's get together. We haven't seen each other in a long time, blah, blah. It didn't work out. I had some gigs. I was traveling. And he told me about what he wanted to do. You know, I do a couple of podcasts. I'm really committed to this one with him, the one that's When the Game Ends, the transition out. We talk about a lot of different things, and it's not just hockey. We're doing all kinds of different athletes. Our goal is to get this thing sponsored. We keep growing, we keep building it, because it really relates, I think, to anybody. Because I think the average person goes through three job changes in their life. So let's say somebody's listening to it, they can relate. Like you had to transition, you had to do something else, right? So we've had rugby players on, we're going to have some golfers on, some football players. So we do one a week right now, and you know, we've got Twitter, Instagram, my YouTube channel, all those places. So it's been really good. We just did another North Dakota guy last night, Mario Lamoureux, who was the second North Dakota player that Carmi had to interview. And both of them, Danny Cristo was the other, both of them were on the team that ended Carmen's college career in Grand Forks. So he's been taking bullets for us, but it's all good. Carmi's a great partner on it. Really proud of him for, you know, dipping his toe into it. We're trying to turn him into a broadcaster, Drew. So it's going good. Thanks for letting me plug it.
Ben, thanks for joining the show. Have a great call on Saturday of the Minnesota Michigan State game.
Thanks, buddy. It's good to see you. It's been a long time.
Arizona State hosts Colorado College this week at Moat Arena in Tempe. Puck drop is set for 7 p.m. on Friday and 5 p.m. on Saturday. I'm Drew Smith, and we'll catch you next time on Inferno on Ice. This is my first time back in the studio recording my podcast in like 6 weeks, just because it's winter break at Cronkite. So we're getting the rust off right now.